Welcome to the F1 Geeks podcast, where we take you deep into the world of Formula One. Join us every week with a new episode where we update you on F1 news, what's happening with contracts, the drivers, teams, circuits, and last but not least, all the behind-the-scenes drama. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you stream. Give the episodes a like and follow us on your favorite social media channel. Cheers.
I'm back.
It's been three episodes, but it's cool. I'm back. I'm bearded. I'm ready for the winter.
Definitely
I put on some weight. Yeah, I'm getting ready for hibernation.
So did you wear black to cover up the weight gain? Is that what you did?
A little bit.
Nice. Nice.
How have you guys been, man? I missed you.
Yeah, I can't say the same. But yeah, I mean, it's been cool. Like Samantha and I have enjoyed it. I've thoroughly enjoyed you not being here.
Wowzers. Let me that last episode when I listened to it driving in my car. What happened? Because did you like spike his drink or something? Because he was loving on Charles. He was loving on Ferrari.
And I
swear at the end of that podcast, I heard him say he thinks Alonso's the best driver on the grid right now, which I was just like dumbfounded by.
Yo, this I'm gonna make sure this pod is different. I'm gonna make sure this one is different.
Samantha has you smitten, man. You went over the dark side for sure.
Now, you know, she's a charmer and she does an excellent job in terms of hosting. So it was pretty easy to get into the trap.
Hey, you know, you guys did willingly. A killer job. I'm really happy you didn't burn down the house. I was really scared.
Ash, we're so happy that you're back. We definitely missed you. I had to like wrangle this one. I went to bed exhausted after it. So happy to have
not the exhaust.
Man, well, Turkey was amazing, and we'll probably, I'm sure, bring that up from time to time today. But we are finally getting our home race, Titus. We lost it in 2020. It's back here in 2021, and it's on the calendar for 2022, which is released. The 2022 calendar is out. 23 races, technically the longest race calendar ever. That was supposed to be this year, but they dropped too many races, and that didn't happen. But next year, there's hope that they will break the record. And with that comes controversy.
Like, who asked to break the record, though? Like, I just... You know, like, right. Like, obviously it's for money, like it all comes down to it. But, you know, like I'm perfectly satisfied with the amount of races that we currently get.
I mean, you know, if you ask me as a fan, not that you are, but I'm going to say my opinion anyway. If you ask me as a fan, 20 races is satisfying, 19 races is satisfying, and 18 races is satisfying. I'm cool with that. But at the same time, I'm sorry, backwards. pulling my fandom out, it's fine. If you tell me, hey, I'm going to give you 30 races or 40 races, I don't care. I want them. But then the human side of me, when I start hearing, and this is Vettel spoke out about this. Vettel, let's start off with Vettel's comments, and then we'll talk about some of the noise that happened this week about the calendar coming out, or after the calendar came out. Vettel said that he believes, let me not botch this. Vettel comments and says, too many events will make F1 less special, and it will also cause valuable, good people to leave the sport because it's too demanding. So, on top of that, Lando Norris recently said this last week, again, not the first time, he hopes that his willingness to speak out on mental health in Formula One can act as aspiration for others to come forward and be more open with their struggles. So, I think that's what it comes down to. And I'll circle back to what I was trying to say, which is the human side of me says when the 23 race calendar came out, you saw a lot of people in F1 and journalism and that follow the sport and have to be at the events talk about how it's rough. It's been very rough. It's going to get more rough, and it takes a toll on them with their families. And yeah. And then the human side of me says, okay, sure. Give them less races, I'll still be satisfied with 18 to 19, right? So even though I'm fine with 30, 40, whatever, you guys take it on the chin, do it for us. What are your thoughts on all of that? Let's unpackage this.
Titus, go ahead.
I mean, it goes back to what Samantha said. It's like cash is king, and Alan Prost brought this up several weeks ago when he said, as much as people and he himself and others might not like the fact that the season is going to be extended with more races, it has to happen because the cost is that much, you know, like the cost and upkeep of a Formula Racing team and Formula One as a whole, it's just astronomical. It really just, the numbers don't add up given, they don't give to less races. You have to race more, or you have to figure out a way to get more sponsorship. And what he pointed to was the lack of sponsorship when it comes to tobacco and alcohol. Those two things have led to what we see now in terms of more races, because by taking away the tobacco sponsorship and the alcohol sponsorship, you've led this huge monetary void that has yet to be replaced. And until that gets replaced, you're just going to see 23, 25, maybe even 30 race seasons, just because that money is missing. And that's something that Formula One had enjoyed during its quote unquote heyday.
I'll build on that and add some history to it. So Titus brought up a good point about the tobacco sponsorship and how much money that brought to the sport in the past. Hundreds of millions of dollars per year, not just over a 10-year span or something like that. And I'm not talking about the sponsorship for the teams. I'm talking about the boards at the tracks, that advertising dollar, commercial and everything else. So when that disappeared, they tried to get cheeky. If you guys go back to, I think it was about 2005 when they started, a lot more countries started to say, we don't want to see tobacco and alcohol advertisement on vehicles at major events like this. And so they got a little cheeky and they started to create little logos and symbols that kind of identify with like the Philip Morris Marlboro brand, but it's not actually it. So they'll just have like the Chevron sign on the car kind of thing, yeah. Without the actual name. And then they cracked down on that. And yeah, it continued from there. But this also then leads to sprint races and what I said, what sprint races were about, and why early in the year, I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're going to be here to stay. And you've seen how hard they've been pushing recently about trying to figure out the format, because they want them to stay. Because what does that do? It opens up way more opportunity for more money to come into the sport on weekends, because it's effectively another race. It's another event. It puts more people in the seats on Saturday, which puts more people also on eyes on channels and streaming on Saturday, and ups their opportunity to create more income. So, which is great. They're a business. They should be able to do that. They're allowed to do that. It's not bad, but it's the economy of it. So hopefully something like sprint races solves a lot of that problem, and the people involved in the circus will get a 20 race calendar or a 19 race calendar, and they won't have to have as many events because they figure out other ways to create other profit centers. Thoughts?
But I don't necessarily agree with that, because as we know, with people that gain wealth,
identify what you don't agree with, because I'm not a lot.
I don't agree with that last part of like, if the money builds up to replace or rival what we've seen in the past with alcohol and tobacco, that all of a sudden that there's going to be less races. I don't agree with that, because I think greed plays.
You don't hope that that will occur.
I mean, I hope, but I'm being realistic in saying that greed plays a factor in all of this. And Formula One has shown itself to be greedy. The people that run Formula One have shown themselves to be greedy.
All sports, by the way, all sports, not just Formula One.
Right, right. But I mean, we're talking about F1, so I want to be very specific about it. So it's like that greed plays into me saying that no matter what, they're going to look at it like, if this does work out, they're probably going to add even more and find a way to like double it. There's an insatiable appetite for money, for wealth, in a way that, yeah, I mean, is it going to push drivers out of the sport? Yes. But I mean, I don't think they really worry about that unless there's a massive like sort of strike, which I mean, I don't see the drivers who are making 20, 30, 40 plus million dollars a year, you know, coming together and saying, I'm willing to lose that kind of money. That's just my thoughts on it. Do I hope for less races to make sure that the mental health and the just the well-being of the drivers and the staff as a whole, like these people that are working behind the scenes and in the front lines and the pits and so forth are getting the proper rest that they need and the proper attention to their health. Yes, of course, I want that, but I understand the nature of greed in sports, as Samantha put, and I just don't see that happening at all.
I don't want this following statement to like diminish my appetite and my love for the sport, but I actually think like less races is probably better. I don't know. I think even lengthening the gap between the end of the season and the next season, it's like this great type of torture, and maybe I'm just a sadist, but you really look forward to, you know, the livery shows and sort of like any sort of news. It just makes it so much more not enjoyable, but like the buildup is really exciting. And I kind of agree. I think like the more races that there are, that it takes away sort of that specialness of it. It's sort of like too much of a good thing, right? And I feel for the staff. Like, I mean, like it's one of those things where I was reading some of the comments and people were like, well, there'd be millions who'd like to be in your spot, where it's like, yeah, well, the grass, you know, isn't always greener here. Like these people are away from their homes. They're away from their family, any sort of structure that they have in their day. And like, you know, that's not to be taken lightly to bring entertainment. We want to look at this at like a macro level. Like, you know, Squid Games was like bringing entertainment to like a bunch of rich people at the detriment of, you know, people's lives. And I know I just did a Squid Game F1 like handshake.
Look at you. I was waiting for somebody to do it.
It's almost dystopian. All this to say is like, I actually like, I savor the races. And I think that that's what makes it so special.
So
one of the things that makes it special.
I will never argue against if the people involved in the sport are complaining that they are suffering. Obviously, who am I to say, no, you have to do this thing or whatever. So, but it's interesting because if you take a look at, look, Titus, you're an NBA fan. Samantha, you what other sports do you watch?
Soccer.
Perfect. How many events do they have in a year? How much do they travel? F1, if you compare it, really has it easy compared to a lot of these sports, right? How many big games a week does a basketball team play? Does a baseball team play? So in that regard, and again, I'm not defending that this, I'm just saying in comparison, relatively speaking, what's the difference in demand? They technically have comparatively, I would say, as far as travel scheduling goes, they have it a bit easier. The prep in between, I don't know. Yes, they work out a lot, but I don't know that the drivers have it worse than other athletes in that regard, in terms of prep per week. Media responsibilities, commercial responsibilities, they have an insane amount compared to others. Yeah. And I think that's how they fill their time in between if you compare it. So, I mean, I think, and again, I'm not making the defense for, I'm just trying to draw all, if I look at other sports, you brought up other sports. So what is it in the F1 that I would love to ask those questions?
I think
I've asked these questions to producers and other journalists in F1 of how difficult it is. And the family aspect is hard for everybody in every sport and for them especially too.
And being go on.
Go ahead. Being gone for 3-4 days at a time, you know, when I compare that to other sports, I know that they do the same thing in basketball and a lot of these others. So I don't know what would be different, like across the board. The prep for the cars these days is a lot better. They have curfews now. Those are going to get more tighter in the future, which is great. This is all good stuff. So I'd be interested to see what the demands would be. And there hasn't been any yet. We're just seeing the noise and friction that's starting to buzz online and in media. So, but yeah, if that does come down to it, I'd be interested in hearing and seeing like, hey, if this is what it takes for us to survive, we kind of have to do it. What are the solutions versus what's the complaints?
Go ahead, Titus.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think one major difference that stands out to me as an observer is the Roman Grosjean sort of thing, which is your livelihood is dangerous, basically, as an F1 driver. So the more races you add, the more likelihood or the greater chances you have of risking great injury or, you know, even worse. This is
super solid point.
Yeah.
And I think that plays a role into the mental capacity, into the mental health, because if I've been around athletes and if you're going into something and it's about your livelihood, I don't think there's a difference, but I do think when you're talking about Formula One and how, and not just your drivers, how the entire crew has to be on point, because one little thing like a bolt missing here or the engine not working quite right there can lead to something where we're talking lawsuits, we're talking worse, a funeral, we're talking a whole lot of things. And that kind of pressure for 25 races or God knows how many more races is just like, to me, it's not worth it at the end of the day. It's just not. Is it going to stop me from watching? Unfortunately, not, because I got to be honest with the hypocrite that I am. You know, like I enjoy Formula One. I don't condone and approve of everything and how it's done. But I do enjoy the sport. But yeah, I just look at it like you're risking people's lives. And until you can make this a sport where you could say that no one is going to die from doing this, then adding more races is just, I think, greed, ultimately.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd go as far as what that last statement was, but I think racing inherently, we've talked about this, and we talked about this after Spa, and we talked about this after several other events, where you're traveling at plus 200 miles per hour, it's always going to be dangerous. Nothing is going to be guaranteed if this is the decision you make. The other thing is, you make an insanely solid point. The higher number of events, the higher likelihood something could happen to any driver and every driver on the grid, 100%. I haven't heard any of the drivers complain too much about a 23 race calendar. Like, seriously complain to where like they want it changed. That's the first
thing.
They
can't.
The teams, and I've heard some mixed dialogues. For sure. And it's interesting that you say that. I want you to build on that once you start talking. and definitely everybody around it, though, isn't necessarily, even though it's F1 putting it together, I've not heard anybody in F1 really truly support it. So where it's coming from will be interesting to hear if we can find that out at some point in the future. F1 marketing versus Liberty versus whatever the case is. We do know that the divvy up of funds over the next few seasons is going to be higher, which means F1 technically makes less money and the teams will absorb more of that. Per event, the teams get more money as well. So it's not just, they're not losing out in that regard. That's the economy they've built and designed now. So go ahead, Samantha.
I just think it's a matter of like, don't bite the hand that feeds you. You know, like, why would you complain about more work? Or I mean, okay, sorry. Obviously everyone complains about more work, but like this is literally the governing body in which you work for. And if this is a decision that they've made unanimously, they would want no show of infighting, because I think that shows.
I would say that's totally true for the people that are working in F1.
Yeah.
But we've seen teams and drivers not give two shits. Like, they'll talk at it. They'll speak at it. But you're talking about people within the management group.
I'm thinking management group, and I'm also thinking within teams too, actually. Like, I think because we're in such an age in which public relations is at such the forefront of all the issues of what they can say and what they can't say. You see, like, you know, just the briefings on Drive to Survive of, like, just even between Charles and Vettel at to a certain extent. It's like, I know, I get that's for the team itself, but I have a hard time believing that there isn't some sort of messaging that goes out from each team saying, don't show too much distaste or don't be too negative about the calendar race that's coming up. We want to be excited. We want people to be excited, that sort of thing. But definitely the people who work as far as like,
I think that only goes so long, because we've just seen historically, especially this last two seasons, how often there's, whether it's team bosses, team engineers, or drivers speak out against things like Hungary, Sebastian, you know what I mean? Standing up against them because he wanted to wear a shirt that said "We Race as One" with the rainbow colors that supported the LGBTQ community. And he said, fuck him. I'll do it again if I have to. That's what I believe. Lewis, last season, how many times? This season, how many times? And so on. And not just that, though. Even we've seen them make, like, Sebastian's always been vocal. Like, I don't know that Sebastian has ever listened to his PR team about he dislikes something about F1. He gets on team radio and yells, I have some words for Charlie. Like, if you guys recall that, like, yeah, he doesn't care. But it is valid for sure, 100%. I'm sure some people, especially, dare I say, drivers that are less established.
I was just about to say, I'm like, you've named like Lewis, you've
all the big, Seth. Yeah. And as I was saying it, I was also analyzing myself. So yes, drivers that are less established will probably play that role a lot further. Drivers that have won some championships that aren't going anywhere and are pretty cemented with their teams and the fandom are likely. And their sponsors, as you mentioned. So that's
one thing I would like to add is that we have to also be mindful of like the time and place of where things are at, like globally, right? We're still dealing with a pandemic. Folks have lost lives, livelihood, family members, relatives, people that have been the breadwinners of the household. Things have been turned upside down. So then if you to come out as a team or a driver and say, well, I can't do a 23 race season, and you know this is affecting me, it's like, bruh, you're gonna have a swarm of people saying, I've lost all of this, I would give, you know, all I can for my biggest trouble in life is to go around the world and drive cars, you know. And so, and to Samantha's point, there is that PR that they have to be very mindful of, given the time and place of where things are at. Like, you can get yourself in a very bad, you know, sort of viewpoint and perspective with people by just coming out and saying, well, you know, I don't want to do this because such and such reasons. Like, I mean, and that's just the nature of it. Like, I think, you know, yes, Sebastian, Lewis, and so forth are going to say what they're going to say because they're established and they can, and they're on their way out. And so they feel more comfortable doing that. But for people that are still trying to establish themselves, to Samantha's point, like, they're going to be very, very mindful not to bite the hand that feeds them, because ultimately it's not really the FIA or the Formula One teams that paid them, is the viewers, it's the spectators. And if the spectators, you know, feel at a certain point, like, yeah, these people are a little bit too far gone in terms of approachability or relatability, then the sport is going to suffer for it.
Oh my God, side note, it is such witching season when I bewitched Titus to agree with me. Oh my God.
I want to go back and listen to the last episode because I just want to hear Titus talk about Ferrari, Charles. And Charles and Fernando.
That's not happening this episode. It's not all happening. Right.
So, hopefully it all works out. My business side tells me likely what will happen. Instead of having one producer, they'll have three. Instead of having one audio director, they'll have three, and they'll give people more breaks that way. And going back to Mr. Vettel's comments about they'll lose good people, likely they will lose good people, because one person doesn't want to get paid a third. Like, if they're used to getting paid a certain amount now, and they're going to get paid a third or a half or whatever the deduction is, you know, arbitrary numbers, but they will probably lose some people. But I'm sure they'll figure it out in the future and moving forward. And we will continue to watch no matter what. It's obviously not affecting us, so hopefully it works out for everybody that it is affecting, though. Next bit, we've got another former F1 driver testing an IndyCar. Hulkenberg is going to be testing soon. That's Hulkenberg, by the way. Huh? You didn't catch that. Titus has disappeared. Titus is melting into his seat right now.
Titus is done.
So,
Makes a baby, and he's testing in a car.
Yeah, it's gonna. And we need to see him in something. It's so sad not to see him racing. Yeah. But that's exciting. And speaking of other Indy drivers, Pat O'Ward, who currently drives for McLaren, Indy team, won a race this season, won his first race. He had a bet going with Mr. Zach Brown. Hey, Zach's got a good problem going this season. He keeps making bets with his drivers and they keep beating him. It's probably the best thing that could happen for him realistically is to lose these bets. So because he won, he now gets to test a McLaren F1 car in Abu Dhabi at the end of the year.
So exciting.
Pretty cool. Awesome. Get to see an American driver in that car. And a lot more people, especially this week, have been making a lot more noise about Herta, young stud in Indy, about making the move to F1. And the rumors are just everywhere about Andretti and Alfa and that whole deal potentially happening. So hopefully that does. And I'm sure Herta will be the first in line there for them to come and replace Gio. We're not talking driver market tonight. No more talk about driver market.
No more. And like, I think we exhausted it. But I think also to buying a team, I think Porsche actually announced 2026 intentions to buy a team.
Yeah. They've been on I can't remember what they refer to the board that they have going right now with the teams for the 2025, 2026 rules. But them and Audi have been at every single meeting and event conducting lots and lots and lots of analysis and making their suggestions of what they would like. And hence, I think three podcasts ago, before I left, we talked about the demands that they made and what they will probably do to the engine rules at that point to help allow them to get into the sport. So, all right.
Exciting.
Do you want to add anything to that, guys? We have a couple more news items. Before we get into Dakota. All right. Benotto, Matteo Benotto, Mr. Ferrari team leader, will miss most of the remaining races this year.
So that's their strategy.
So he could stay at the factory and focus on critical 2022 development agenda. Man, what is going on? This flip-flopping of you talking trash now about Ferrari and him praising Ferrari? Like, what happened while I was gone? What happened?
It's like a Freaky Friday situation.
Chemistry happened. We're finally on the same page.
Oh my goodness.
Different times.
Signore Binotto is just, I don't know. He's just, I don't know if he's hiding. I don't know if this is just, he's just doing him.
I'll defend it. He mentioned it before the season started that this was going to be a thing this year. That he wasn't going to be. Yeah. So to defend Benotto. Pirelli finished their 2022 18-inch tire test program at Paul Ricard this last week with Alpine and Danny Kvyat. They have put in an insane number of hours, and it's pretty awesome. I'll read off some of these statistics to you guys if you care.
I do.
Titus doesn't care, but so. Over 4,267 laps on 10 different circuits, over 392 sets of tires, over 10,000 hours of development, over 1,000 hours of simulation development, 30 different prototypes tested. They've traveled over 20,000 kilometers, which is about half the circumference of the Earth. And they've said that they've got about 90 some odd percent of the tire done. Basically, the tire is done, they're saying, and with the remaining tests, they'll do preseason next year. And throughout the season will just be the last final, like, tweaking for whatever the drivers say and want and do. I don't know what else to really say about that. What do you guys think about the 18-inch tires versus the 13s? Does it matter to you?
It is.
Thicker is always better. That's what I prefer.
I had a joke that I'm not going to say.
just leave it to the rubber. Just leave
my
it to the
rubber. My mom watches this, so...
Hey, shout outs to moms.
Hey.
Hey. Moms in the paddock.
Hey.
All right. We're gonna bring up your favorite guy now, Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah. Coming in. You meant Titus, not me.
Yeah. Oh, your favorite guy. No. I don't have him on the agenda tonight, but I can bring him up if you want. Valtteri Bottas was in the news for saying his recent upswing in results in Formula One has been helped by his future in the sport being settled. What are your thoughts on that?
It makes perfect sense, right? I mean, I think there was this story I was reading about Tom Brady and how the Patriots had basically did a test on him and other like great athletes and tried to figure out like what was like the similarities. And it said different than any other athlete that was performing at that level. Tom Brady really thrived when he felt like he was in a comfortable, loving environment, which is anything but like when it comes to the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. So like, I think with Valtteri is much the same way. I think Valtteri performs at his best when he's in a loving, supportive environment. And then it's not to say that Mercedes isn't necessarily a quote unquote good environment, but I don't think, obviously, because Lewis is the preferred driver there, it's not fully supportive of Valtteri. So it can be very cold and distant. And I think Valtteri now knows that he's going to a home where he's going to be the preferred driver. He's going to be the number one, at least for the first couple of years. And that sort of security gives him the comfortability that he needs to be the best. And let me tell you, since that time of the reporting of the Alfa Romeo deal for him, he's just been lights out. He's really, really been true to form that we've seen in the past when he was first at Williams and then when he came up the first couple of years with Mercedes.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question to both of you. And then Samantha, if you want to comment on his comment on Valtteri's words. Did you ever see Valtteri as a champion or potential champion like he said he could be and others said that he could be? Did you ever have that opinion yourself? Were you ever convinced of that?
Are you talking to me or Samantha?
Samantha first, and you can jump at it. Oh. I already know what I think, but go, you guys, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he definitely has been, and we've said it on the pod so many times, he just gets overshadowed by Lewis. He's in a situation in which he's been placed as second, and we've seen it on the grid. He's had to move aside as part of strategy, quote unquote. And we've seen him perform, and we've questioned why it's been inconsistent. And I think that it's just, not to Titus's point, not that Mercedes hasn't been a loving environment, you know, but to foster his development, I think he would have needed a little bit more attention. And I think that that takes a toll on your mental performance and your performance. And I think that we are going to see some more wins from Valtteri, maybe not a championship at this point in his life, and with the car that he's going into. But even Toto had said, like, I think this week, it said in response to Valtteri's statement, we will see more wins from Bottas. And I'm so excited to see this guy get away from someone's shadow and finally get the light he deserves, because this can't be it. This isn't it for Valtteri.
You want to add?
No, I mean, the only thing I totally 100% agree with Samantha. I got to rethink life. But anyway, I got it.
I won't remind you that we're podcasting. I'm going to leave you out there to hang dry.
Got it. All right. So, but yeah, I think what Samantha says is 100% correct. And the other thing that I would add to it is that, like, I'm interested to see if a one team driver or one driver team returns to Formula One, mm-hmm. where, like, I think a guy like Valtteri would benefit. I think a guy like Pierre Gasly would benefit. I think some of these guys on the grid just need to be like the sole driver of a team. And I don't know if that works in terms of functionality. I'm sure Ash will correct me and say that it won't work. But I would be interested to see that sort of return to the sport, because I think in these cases where we're seeing is that teams are sacrificing the development of really good drivers for the sake of a great driver potentially, or a great driver, like in terms of what we actually seen with evidence. And I wonder if that's to the detriment of both the driver, the team, and the sport.
So I don't know if I'd correct you, but for me, I don't think it's gone. Like you're saying, you want to see it come back. I don't think it ever left. I think it's circumstantial. Mm. I think it's circumstantial. So for example, I don't think at Mercedes, it was the case prior to Valtteri going there. I think there was a true 50-50 there when Nico was there. And we've even heard Toto, even as I'm saying that now, I'm remembering Toto's comments. Toto said that it was 50-50 until Nico left. He said he vowed to himself he's never going to let that happen again. And we hear them make comments. You've seen it. We've heard them make comments saying that whoever's leading going into the weekend will get advantage and strategy and stuff. But we've seen them ask him to pull over, and we've seen them. We all know who's stacked at number one there. And he should be. In my opinion, absolutely, Lewis should be. He's the better driver. He is the better driver. And same thing at Red Bull, like, and same thing at any team. They have every right, and not just, it's not about rights. It's how don't you do that if that's for the benefit of the team moving forward by giving the fastest guy the best opportunities. So it's the nature of the sport. I'm gonna go backwards a little bit to talk about the Brady comments and bring that back around full circle. And I want to try to draw on parallels to some degree. And I don't think there's definitely some, and I think also F1 is quite unique and doesn't necessarily stand the way some of the other sports do. Because in F1, who's your number one enemy?
Your team.
You have to beat your teammate. Yeah. You have to beat your teammate. You have to beat your teammate in F1. Yeah. And so comparatively to other team sports, F1's really not, like, F1, when there needs to be an asterisk next to the word team, like teammate, because its definition and objectives are very different for athletes in the sport versus other sports. I do agree with you that, it resonates with me when Brady says stuff like that. I had a lot of problems growing up with a lot of coaches in sports, because my experience was a lot of my coaches were very drill sergeant-ish. And I didn't like that environment at all. And I did not flourish in those types of environments. Mm. And I did on sports teams that the team was very more in unison, not so much. If you miss a freaking layup or if you miss a free throw, you freaking like get yelled at afterwards, or even during the game for that matter, like in front of everybody. So that doesn't benefit me. I understand that. And I understand Mercedes, and I agree with you. Mercedes is definitely out of the top teams, they're 100% probably the top team, the number one team that probably loves on their the best way to say it, on their drivers than the others. Yeah. 100%. And I think that's why Lewis flourishes there. I think that's why I don't think Lewis would have as many championships as it. Imagine if he'd gone to Ferrari or if he'd gone to McLaren, or stayed with McLaren, I should say. I don't think he'd be, and even if they had the same kind of package that Mercedes delivered, I don't think he would have delivered as much wins. Maybe the same number of championships, but I think it would have been harder. I think it would have been a bit more of a struggle. I think he would have been torn down a bit more. Yeah. I think the culture at Mercedes is just right in that regard.
there's something to be said about personalities of a team and how it matches their principal drivers or whoever. Yeah, there's like definitely like, just, I don't want to go on this, but like Max and Red Bull, right? He flourishes in that environment.
And he's total opposite of these guys, right? He, of what we're talking, he's very rough and tough and no holds barred attitude. Like, and that works. And that, cause that's Red Bull's culture and that works for them. Yeah. So yeah, that's a very good point. Going into this weekend, I'm going to talk to you. Do you guys want to add anything?
Gasly, my favorite.
I'm bringing that. Okay. You want me to, I'll pull that forward first if you'd like. So that's actually a good transition anyway. We'll segue into our boy Gasly here. Yes. Gasly made some comments this week that basically he said he deserved a shot at the Red Bull seat in 2022 and he didn't get it. And it was obviously very upsetting. That's very telling to me that, I mean, I already know what Titus is going to say, but I'm going to let him say it. But remember the comments we heard after Silverstone where Helmut Marko came out and said, like, we've had a really good conversation about the future and da, da, da. And, all, and then we all kind of rolled our eyes and Titus really rolled his eyes. So this totally just kind of validates the eye rolling, doesn't it? That, yeah, like there was nothing really going on. That was just PR jargon from Helmut. Go ahead, Titus. Use your words.
There's a switch and bait.
It's like Pierre Gasly is that friend that you really love, and you see them making the most unfortunate of decisions because they have it in their heart and they believe that they're in a relationship that the person that's been treating them abusively and terribly is going to change automatically.
Samantha gave it, she framed it out for us like 10 episodes ago. What did she call it? Like when somebody's
gaslighting? Was it, they gaslight him?
Yeah, they gaslighting Gasly. Yeah.
I don't want that to catch on.
It doesn't need to catch on. It's the truth. I mean, we're seeing it, and that's the trouble of this. Is like we've all said it. We all love Gasly. Gasly is very difficult not to love him. Like he's passionate about the sport. He's passionate about other drivers. He's very fun. His personality is so intoxicating and contagious in a very good way. There's not much more I can say about Gasly, and he demands so much of himself. You know, so I can understand why he's demanding of his engineers and stuff. So when I heard stories about him, like having back and forth in like the staff at Red Bull, I'm like, yeah, he should be like that. He should be able to say, hey, this isn't working, because obviously it hadn't been working even after him. So I'm at a point now where I'm like, fool me once, you know, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Okay. And Gasly just keeps getting fooled, fooled in regards to Red Bull. And it's just like, at this point in time, I'm no longer looking at Helmut Marko. I'm no longer looking at Christian Horner or Max or Red Bull as a whole. I'm looking at Pierre. Are you that stubborn that you cannot say, let me, you know, clip my Red Bull wings and go fly somewhere else? I'm done.
I don't want to beat this because I've said it so many times and I don't want to keep having the same conversation from my end. You guys feel free to say what you think, but I've always said I want him to be in a different environment. I don't want him at Red Bull because I know he's never going to do anything there with Max there. Not only with Max there, just with the situation and the history now. But we're not talking driver market, but...
Okay.
There's a high probability in my mind now, the way things are playing out at Aston, that we could see him in a seat there in 2023.
Hey.
It's a long ways away, a million and one moving parts, you know, but there's something playing out right now in my head with the way things are going at Aston and Sebastian's age and what he would have to complement the team with. He could potentially be there. Now, Titus, yeah, it would be amazing if he could clip his wings. We don't know what the contractual obligations are like and what the buyout's like. That's the only problem. I think he's one of those guys that he's very reliant on the relationship with them, and they've brought him this far. And so It's who knows how he can get away, if he can, who's paying for it, and so on. So we'll see how that plays out.
My only worry, and this was something I was going to bring up before you brought up this like Aston Martin life jacket, was like, if this is him coming out saying this, is it because they have definitively told him, we don't have a trajectory, a development trajectory for you? You will indefinitely stay at AlphaTauri kind of thing. And that's so sad, but I think that's what it is. And he's coming out to say it and move on. But that was my thing. Like
The moment I heard them sign Sergio and say that I was done right there. Like, I already was like, nah, I don't buy that Helmut Marko comment either. And then when they announced that they had already signed Sergio for next season, I was like, it's over. That's it. It's over for Gasly. Like, it's done.
Bro, like, I just, at this point, like I said, I look at Gasly and I'm like, how do you not read the situation properly, other than you're so stubborn in like, I have to prove them right. I mean, I have to prove them wrong.
Okay, Titus.
I have a good comparison for you.
What's up?
Your relationship with Samantha. Because you know everything you feel is deep in your heart is right, but every time she looks in your eyes, boy, she changes your mind. It's that. It's the abusive relationship.
I can't even see anymore.
It's the abusive relationship.
What's going on? I got to fill this podcast out. There we go.
No, it's true, though. Like, the Helmut Marko, we all saw through that. That was just, they wanted to keep him on as a strong AlphaTauri option. And it's unfortunate that, but then again, we don't know what the contractual obligations are. Maybe he can't leave right now.
But
even if that's the case, though, like, look, I'll tell you this. If you want out, you can get out, right? I think the thing that I had mentioned prior to the signing of Gasly and Perez was basically he should make a play for Williams, like Williams being, you know, just hitting the reset button on the Williams team and new money coming in and the possibilities of the new regulations sort of playing into their hand, all these sorts of things. And when he re-signed with AlphaTauri, I was just looking at it like when it was announced that he was like him and Yuki were going to be back for next season, I just said to myself, like, I don't see how this benefits him at all. And it's very clear that car is going to be built for Max from now until Max is super young. It's not like you're dealing with somebody that's like Carlos Sainz's age, that's 27 or 28. You're dealing with somebody that's super young, like, that's going to be in the sport for at least the next decade if he wants to and still be great. And I'm not saying he can't be as great as Max, as I've said before. I do feel like Max is a tier or two better than him right now. I just feel like this is just stubbornness. This is Pierre saying, I want to prove them wrong while I'm here. And I hope it works out, but just the reality of things, just say, man, get out, man. Get out.
Great movie, by the way. All right.
Great movie.
We've got the United States Grand Prix this weekend, baby, at Circuit of the Americas. I'm going to talk about a couple of the characteristics of the track. We'll talk about some of the history, and then y'all can field your predictions. We could say what we want to say, what's going to happen. COTA. I'm going to talk really quickly. Design of several corners at the circuit were inspired by iconic turns from other racetracks. So turns 3 through 6 are modeled after Maggots and Becketts at Silverstone, some of the greatest, arguably the greatest corners. Turns 12 and 15, modeled after Hockenheim Stadium section. Turns 16 through 18 are modeled after turn 8 at Istanbul, which we just got back from. COTA is tied with Baku for the fourth most number of corners of any track on the calendar, with a total of 20. Split between 11 left-hand turns and 9 right-handers. Because of the high number of corners and variety of corner speeds, it's also one of the busiest laps. Drivers change gears 56 times per lap. Pretty awesome. There, it's also an anti-clockwise track, which there aren't very many anti-clockwise tracks on the calendar. So
we just got back from one.
Yeah, and it is a big deal usually when you hit one after you've done a lot of the others because your neck muscles aren't prepared and aren't as conditioned. Wow. Yeah. So the other ones, if you were interested in knowing, were Istanbul, as Samantha mentioned, Imola, Interlagos, Baku, the new track in Saudi Arabia, Shedda, and Yas Marina. Turn one, the biggest single corner elevation change of the season with a 30-meter climb in just over 200 meters. So pretty awesome.
Bring
it
on.
A lot of cool, unique stuff at the circuit. People love going to the circuit. The drivers love coming to the circuit. Austin is a literal party on race weekend. Austin in general, if you ever get a chance to visit, I don't know if either of you have gone, but have you ever been to Austin, Titus?
No comment.
Okay. So what happens in Austin stays in Austin, apparently. When you go to Austin, if I recall correctly, it's like Congress is the main artery that goes in there. And I can't remember which streets, but they shut down like a portion of downtown and any given weekend. Because nice. And it's just, yeah, it's just bar hopping and all kinds of other things. So lots of fun. Lots of young energy college kids, very progressive, very liberal city. It's actually quite interesting that it's in Texas, considering how liberal it is, because it feels like you're in San Francisco when I go there. It's awesome. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very live. So it's a great place to have great place to have an international event like this. Going into this weekend, Lewis has won every race here but one. Okay. he's coming into this weekend with Max having won the last race, but we know that, well, we think that Red Bull may have set up the car for a little bit more wet weather than the Mercedes did in the last event. So for me, I think Lewis does have an advantage actually going into this. But here's my storylines or my potential like asterisks. The number twos could wreak havoc on like Sergio's positioning in this race could wreak havoc on Lewis's strategy and vice versa. Bottas's could wreak havoc on Max's. That's one big thing. Red Bull have some aero bits coming in. So I don't know how much and how significant. Mercedes might as well. I couldn't find that story, or that bit of news, but they might as well. So I don't know who's playing out. They're still developing like these small bits here and there. I have to look at the little token system agenda of who's bringing what to what if in the remainder of the year. But yeah, I mean, the significance of things have already happened. So what are your thoughts? What do you think going into this? Does Mercedes have still high momentum, even though they're behind in points and Max won the last race? Or do you think they go into this with the historical record showing them that they can clinch this or not clinch it, but they can win this?
I'll say this. Given that this season has been quite unprecedented in both its like both its calls, its policy in the results, I think I wouldn't default to like historical wins, thereby saying I don't think Lewis will podium first. I don't think he'll take pole this race.
I disagree.
Of course you do.
Not the of course you do. We'll talk after the podcast about that. But but like no, I think this is going to be fun. It does favor Mercedes. And there was like the comments about like basically from Mark Webber, from Helmut Marko, that are just basically insinuating that Mercedes has the better car. I don't know if this is, you know, tactics, as Lewis would call it, or if this is actually true. But I think Mercedes has to be dominant here. And the reason why I say they have to be dominant here is because you know, they...
There's a difference between has to be dominant and will actually be dominant. They understand they have to. They understand the risk.
Right. Right. Like, I think if Red Bull wins this, if, let me be very specific, if Max wins this race, then I think you're at a point now where it really is Max's championship to lose again. I think we were at that point maybe like several races ago, but, you know, a couple of DNFs and things not going properly just kind of put the championship at play for Lewis again. But yeah, this is the chance for Lewis and Mercedes to take advantage in both the constructor title and the driver's title. And I think it's going to be Lewis. I think it's going to be Lewis's weekend to lose. I think everything is playing right in his favor. And if he messes this up, then he's truly feeling the pressure of this season like none other.
I think this, okay. I'm sorry. Samantha, do you want to rebuttal?
No, for once. I'll let Titus go.
I think this is like that critical mass moment for the year for the championship. Yeah. I think this weekend is that. And this is what I think. I think if Lewis wins, it's not. But if he loses, it is for him. His mentality, for his head game, it is. So if he wins, it's just like, okay, the championship's still on. Red Bull's not going to lose anything out of losing this race. If they play second, it's fine. But mm-hmm. if Lewis does lose this race and Max pulls further, it is going to be a big mental, like, thing, problem for Lewis going into the final races. We only have, what did we say, 5 races left after this? 5,
yeah.
And maybe, right? We don't know. Those are asterisks. That's like,
true, yeah.
We could have less. So it's possible something still gets canceled. There's rumors afloat that Brazil still might get canceled. So who knows? We'll see. So if that happens and he loses, it's like compounding. So we'll see, but that's speculation. So I feel like Red Bull goes into this weekend knowing the history, knowing how the Mercedes has been performing since Silverstone with its straight line speed and all these other things that we keep hearing about, saying that's fine. We do the best we can. If we come out of this loss, it's a track they should have won at. We know what's coming next. So minimal damage, right? That's the idea. So I think they're in a really good position going into this. Who do you guys have for the rest of the podium? And who do you guys think is going to perform well here? I'm torn right now with what's going to happen at this circuit. With Ferrari, I think will do decent, but this guy.
I just left this frame.
Ferrari, I think will do decent, but I'm actually, I don't know what's going to happen between Sergio and Bottas, because Bottas has performed like stellar recently, even at like a place where I thought like Sergio would have done better than him on a couple of occasions. So
I'm actually thinking McLaren might throw a wrench in a lot of this. Like Lando might show up.
You know how spotty Ferrari was?
You don't like Daniel Ricciardo.
He's too inconsistent. Like, I not that I don't like him.
She loves Danny.
I love Danny.
She does love Danny.
He said Lando might show up.
I'm thinking, like, if I'm a team principal and I'm like, who do I put all my eggs in? It's Lando. I think Lando would show up for this race. I think he'd be good.
I'm McLaren. You know how we were feeling about Ferrari earlier in the year? In the last, like, 3 races, they've been, like, awesome. Like, really consistent, really good, or 4 even. And I feel like McLaren's now really spotty. I feel like they flipped.
They come back.
I feel like they swapped. I'm like, I don't know where to weigh McLaren. And maybe you know what it is now that I'm like, I'm saying it out loud. It's the Danny bit that's making me think that, because Danny's doing this, like he's rising and falling. So, so I don't know, actually. Now I retract my statement. I was going to say something about McLaren. I'm not going to know, but they're still an asterisk to me.
But yeah, you're right, though. I think that McLaren Ferrari, like, I think what's so unclear, I think where we're at right now in the season is like that second and third spot is not clinched. It could be McLaren. It could be Ferrari. it could, you know, it's just, sorry, that third spot, not second or third, but that third spot. And you're right. It's, they have swapped. So it makes it so much more fun. And it's going to be really interesting how it metabolizes per race. That's the fight I like. I think that's a cool one.
Yeah, I have nothing to say about Ferrari, but McLaren, this is what I'll say. I don't know. I don't know if they'll show up this weekend. I agree with y'all. Like, I think they've been very spotty as of late. And I think it's due to, you know, things slipping out of their hands, you know, in regards to Lando. And just Daniel is just flip a coin. I don't know.
Get angry when he was like, I went out there raged racing. Like, someone do that. But the reason I say McLaren is because, you know, Zach Brown is a proud American. And like, I think he's going to want a really good show here. And I don't know how that pans out. That's in strategy, but like, well, he doesn't want to show a bad face.
His marketing prowess has already taken, you know, come forward. We're going to have some Indy drivers there. We're going to have a bunch of all the McLaren groups from the other series. There are also the bet that Ricardo won in, from Monza, from winning a race. Where he gets to drive Earnhardt's stock car is going to happen at COTA. It's going to happen. It's going to be part of like, yeah, the event. So that's
where
the
pageantry. Marketing. I do respect COTA for that. They have such pageantry. Yeah.
Yeah. So to speak to validate and to confirm what you were saying, like that's going to happen for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I say
watch out for Fernando Alonso.
That's I was going to say, like, how do you feel about Alonso?
I feel great about Alonso, and you know, he is one of the best drivers, but he's not in one of the best teams. He's not in one of the best cars, I should say, not teams. The team is fantastic, but he's not in one of the best cars this season. And I don't know how I feel about that car at this circuit. This circuit likes big engines and big power, and that Renault/Alpine is not there. So I don't know. I think the Astons will be ahead of the Alpines this weekend.
Ooh. Yeah.
Where's Ocon, man? You want to talk about somebody that hasn't shown up recently.
But yeah, no, it's, how do we feel about George? How do we feel he's gonna show up today this weekend?
Yeah, I think George would be okay. I mean,
same old. Like,
yeah, same old, which is not bad.
No, it's great for where he's in, but it's because he does it now every weekend. It's like whatever,
right? and he can't really do any more because if he does, then you're like, oh man, this guy is really something else, you know?
But he's ordinary, is what you're saying. He's really good.
Yeah,
He's really good. I'll just say like this. He's doing what Antonio should have been doing in Alfa Romeo.
True.
Which is really like making, normalizing, you know, qualifying well, normalizing, getting into points, normalizing the progress of your program. Since Antonio's been with Alfa Romeo, they've kind of regressed this past season, you know? So it's like,
They also were really early. I think after like the first race, they said they were.
I understand. Yeah, I understand that. Like, I mean, yeah, okay, cool. Still, like, I mean, if you were a better driver those past season, maybe they would have had, you know, a little bit more money and more resources to get better. I mean, I don't know anything. I'm not a Formula One driver. All I'm saying is that Georgie boy over there, thanks to British media, because British media powers vehicles nowadays, he's performing really well. I'm just taking a shot at Alonso. But I think George is going to have one of those weekends. But maybe Gasly. Let's see if Gasly does something to, you know, to stand up out there. But I'm thinking Fernando. I'm thinking Gasly. McLaren, I don't know, but I hear you, Ash. I hear what you're saying in terms of this being an American race, this being an opportunity to really show up and show out. It'd be something if McLaren gets a win at COTA.
Yeah.
That would
be wild.
You know what I haven't looked up yet, ladies and gentlemen? the weather report.
Ooh.
Let me take a look.
We should have like weather music, you know, like when they.
I used to have every circuit city on my phone for weather. I just leave it there year out.
Do y'all find it interesting? And maybe Ash, you could speak to this because you're the host. But and Samantha, feel free to chime in as well, because I don't necessarily know this. Why aren't weathermen or weather women like involved in Formula One? Because I think there is a way to add that element in terms of media coverage or even team member that would be very useful, like someone that can
let me take you down history.
Here we go.
Oh,
so my friend, in the 90s and early 2000s, when F1 was splurging, like hemorrhaging money into the teams, into the sport, McLaren, especially McLaren, they're the ones who get this accolade. The teams were putting, they had that. They had people placed in different positions around the circuit in cars, measuring with telemetry, with instrumentation. They had people in the stands at different corners, at every corner of the track. They had helicopters in the air, and they had people stationed on the ground miles away.
That's wild.
Feeding data. And this was outlawed. It was banned. So it used to occur. Now they all have to have the same tools and tech. It's, they all have to be reading the same meters. They all have to be reading the same, yeah, effectively stuff. So, yeah, it's phenomenal, dude, what they used to go through. FYI, looked up the weather report. We have a 30% chance of rain on Sunday as of today, 10/19/2021. But we'll see. You know, it could change to zero in 2 days, right? So we'll see how that goes.
Or to 90%.
Yeah, Judette. Which I hope is the case. I want to see a little. I like mixed conditions. I don't like full downpours. I like it when it gets wet, dries out, gets wet again, or stuff like that. That's like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Great conditions.
All right, Samantha, your podium for COTA.
So Max, Super Max. I'm gonna say Gasly, and I'm just gonna go out there completing Carlos. Whatever. Yeah, I'm gonna go there. Let's go. Let's make a bold prediction.
I mean, if we're gonna go bold, I'm gonna go Lewis, then I'm gonna go Charles.
What?
And then I'm gonna go with Fernando. If we're gonna
whoa,
go bold.
Oh,
this love is this.
Yeah,
bro, you better. Bold.
I'm gonna go bold. Yeah, like I mean, see out here going bold. Why can't I go bold too? Let me go bold.
Dom, I'm not going with you to Vegas. We're gonna lose our money.
Most definitely. But we're gonna have a good time doing it.
Lewis, Max, Charles. That's my bet.
Awesome.
Lewis, Max, Charles.
I like this.
I think Charles is gonna run for fourth realistically, but my bold bet is Charles for third. So
yeah, Charles is by far one of the best team principals and engineers. I mean, this guy, have you seen his ability to not only drive a Formula One racing car, but actually have his own on the go like strategy? The stuff is brilliant. Like this guy is truly amazing. Yo, Ferrari. Just seeing Charles come up with a game plan while he's behind the wheel driving of the F1. That's comical. It's funny. And it's also the brilliance of that driver.
I was having, this is something we might do on the show or on our Twitch stream at some point when we launch that, which is we were talking about how many variables they are going through when they're in the cockpit driving.
Yeah.
Figuring out the car's balance, figuring out what it needs for the next lap, shifting, talking on team radio, talking pit strategy, analyzing what their competition is doing, 2-3 cars back, 2-3 cars forward, and on the fly. We were talking about getting somebody here, and I'm actually interested to hear if anybody at home is interested in this, bringing in a mental aptitude coach and strength, yeah, to have us sit in the simulator for a full race period, trying to do stuff like that and basically going through with them and having them analyze all the things we F up in, basically compared to the
hilarious.
I think it would be pretty fun. And we might not, we'd have to cut that because I'm sure not everybody wants to see a full race thing of it, but we'd cut the highlights out and show you about like what they do and how they do it so well compared to us normal humans, man. And all the, you know, how we all sit at home and talk trash to them on TV and say how we can do it better.
I don't know about you, but I'm doing my neck exercises every night. So put me in that car.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, great show, guys. Awesome being back. Can't wait to see what happens this weekend. We'll see what the weather's like. We'll keep an eye on it. Hope. What do we have? Do we have a break before the next one in Mexico? In Mexico?
Yes, I think so.
I got to look at the calendar really quick. Ooh, Mexico is November 5th through the 7th. Yeah. So we have 2 weeks to get there. Wherever you are in the world, enjoy this race weekend. I hope your driver wins, unless it's Titus's. Actually, I think Titus and I chose the same guy, so we both chose Lewis. So.
You're such a hater. You hate yourself. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. I'm inviting you to next year's player hater ball. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I'll be there. I have my red suit on representing not Ferrari. Hate.
Bye. Ciao, everybody.
Good night.
Have a great night.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. If you want more F1 Geeks content to consume, check out the website, f1geeks.com. We have exclusive and original stories. You can also stream every episode of the podcast on there, or you can go to your favorite streaming platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Also, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, @F1Geeks Official, or Clubhouse @F1Geeks. Ciao.